Welcome back if you're a regular Superpower State of Mind listener. And welcome, welcome, welcome if you're brand new to the podcast. Thanks all for taking the time to listen. Now, this week I'm with presenter, DJ and mum of two, Sarah Jane Crawford. I listened to Sarah for so long on Radio 1 Extra, I felt like I knew her. And I used to watch her all the time on MTV. I felt I knew her already, as you do with someone you see or hear all the time. But this was the first time we've ever spoken. It's a fun conversation taking in being a mum, the guilt of working and not being at home, and also the importance of a supportive partner. I hope you enjoy it and take something from it like I did. Right, Sarah, thank you for coming on.
Oh, it's so good to meet you over here.
I know, same. It's so weird because I used to listen to you all the time on One Extra, and your voice is iconic, so it's really weird talking to you.
Thank you.
How have you been? I know today's been manic for you, so thank you so much for coming on.
Do you know what? When you messaged me, I was buzzing because I've been kind of watching you for a while, and I just thought, yes, I want to come on your podcast. So I've been good. It's been not the easiest time, but amazing at the same time. So I've been navigating... having two, I used to be able to say two under two, but now that summer's turned two, I haven't got that excuse anymore. but I've just been navigating sort of parenthood and then sort of transitioning back into work a little bit in my, you know, career wise. And then just like trying to balance like physical and mental health as best as possible as well, because all of it has taken a lot from me. And I feel like I've got less energy now than I did in my 20s, but I'm also living a lot cleaner than I used to as well, because I'm like 5 years sober as well, so it's kind of weird. I should have done this earlier, then I would have had loads of energy.
No, do you know what, you sound like me. I mean, it's really weird because I know you've had a really busy and successful career today, and I understand how it feels like to juggle motherhood with working. Obviously I don't have two years old. So I don't know how on earth you've managed it, really, because last night I think I was up from 2 till 5. She wanted to play. She's up in her cot, and I was like, I looked at her and I just gave her the look and I was like, what are you doing? So I pulled her into my bed. No, she wanted to play there. So I put her back in her cot. No, she wanted to. And I pulled her and I was like, what the hell? And I was thinking, why do you do it every time I've got like a busy day the next day? And so I woke up and I had a nap, and then I felt like out of body, like, you know, that weird when you've had no sleep and my energy was just lacking. And the weirdest thing you just said is the past, I think I've changed my kind of lifestyle around more the past 6 months since she's been born. So I started exercising, eating better, and I used to kind of avoid exercise quite a lot. And I've gone sober 2 months ago, and not quite 5 years, but that I found I was doing throughout my whole of my 20s, literally partying, drinking here and there. And so I technically should have more energy now, but I don't.
I know, but can you imagine? On the flip side, can you imagine how much worse it would be if you were hungover now as well?
Oh, hell no. Hell no, I couldn't. And I've done it. Yeah, I've been hungover when I've had to look after, and I thought, oh my gosh, no, I cannot. And that's what put me off. And I thought, you feel so much more better for kind of having a clear mindset. And I think my mental health has improved massively overall, especially with kind of going sober. But it's really difficult being a mum and working.
Very. And you can see how it's hard for women to maintain that same level of money and career and intensity and running businesses. You can just see it. Once you step into it, you're like, oh, I get it. I get why women are always a couple of steps behind. It's reality.
I mean, how do you do it? Because you're on the hits. You're Monday to Thursday, right? 7 till 10 at night.
Well, so at the moment I'm filling, so I used to do that slot. So I used to do 7 till 10, then I was doing 1 till 4 in the afternoon. Then when I had the babies, I carried on doing the weekends. I think I only had a month off because I was pre-recording the show. So I wanted to continue to be, you know, working, but not like having to, because obviously when COVID happened as well, I was nervous to be in the studio, and no one knew how it was going to impact you if you're pregnant and stuff. So avoided COVID for the first pregnancy, then had it in the second one, which was probably one of my worst moments ever in health, you know, terms of health ever in my life. And then now I'm on air
4 days live, and then I'm on air 6 days a week, but like 4 days live, and then the other days are pre-recorded, and four of the nights are pretty late nights. Yeah, so this week I'm actually on a slightly earlier, but normally I'd be on like from 10 p.m which is pretty late, but then it also gives me time in the day to do other bits and pieces. Like I've been doing stuff for BBC Morning Live and stuff like that, so it's a tough juggling act, and sometimes you feel like you're going under a bit. But then sometimes I feel like I'm going under when if I'm not busy as well, because then I'm not being creative. So it's very hard. I said this to my husband. I said, like, you know, because there were times, I remember back when I was doing The Extra Factor in 2014, and I remember I was doing like 7 days a week for about 2 or 3 months straight, because I was on air doing, you know, one extra, then I was doing that, then I'd do script meetings, then I was had branding stuff. And there were times when I would call a friend and be like, just before I'd do a live show, because it was so much pressure as well, because you were there with the boss, who at the time was Simon Cowell, obviously. And I'd be like, I can't do this. And she'd go, no, you can. And I just have so much anxiety around everything. And then sometimes when you're not as busy, and like when I'd, you know, stepped into motherhood, then it's like you've got anxiety around, oh, maybe I should be doing more. So I think sometimes it's just anxiety that needs kind of like not tweaking, but like if I speak to my, when I've been through counselling, I was talking to a really good perinatal counsellor about everything that I had been through, because I went through a bit of postnatal depression and also had a bit of obsessive compulsive disorder as well, where I'd have to go through different rituals, otherwise I'd feel really unsafe or something would happen to the babies. It's hard, isn't it? And she would always just say to me, first of all, right, what sleep are you getting? What are you eating? What exercise are you doing? Are you taking your vitamins? And it's sometimes when you go back to basics, then you can get that sort of balancing homeostasis feeling back again, because anxiety can come when you're not busy or when you're too busy. So it's like you can't really win unless you change like what you're doing, if that makes sense, like the foundation of health, like you said.
Definitely. But the worst thing is the anxiety comes when I get that I'm doing too much work and I'm not spending enough time with her.
Or yeah, there's that, the guilt. Oh my God.
Like, yo, what's going on? You know, yes. I'm being a mum, but then I need the work to come in.
Yes, it's really hard.
So there's never a fine little balance where I'm like, chill mode.
I know, it's hard, because you do need that momentum and that consistency. And then I just think that, I don't mean to sound sexist, but I just don't think that men, not all men anyway, feel that same, there will be dads out there saying, well, I do. But I think generally speaking, mums will feel more guilty about stepping away from 100%. The family unit to get the work done, you know, more so than men, you know.
Yeah,
Brian definitely doesn't feel as guilty as I do at all, ever, as an example.
Yeah, you know, me and Zaya's dad aren't together, mm-hmm. but we're really good friends and we co-parent, and he works like a lot, but he adores her and wants to see her a lot. But like, if he's got a full day, he'll be like, oh, I'm tired tonight, so I'll see her in the morning. I'm like, oh, that's nice, because I've been working all day and I've got to do the nights.
Yeah, it's just not like, the same. It's not the same. And like I said, there'll be outliers. There'll be examples of, you know, anomalies where there'll be dads that are like mainly doing everything. But yeah, I just think there's always that level of extra level of guilt that you feel. And also the thing that annoys me, so sometimes we'll be out and someone will say to me, oh, isn't he good with the kids? And I'm like, he's their dad. Why would he not be good with them? Like, what, I should give him an extra medal? Because, and he'll always say to me, oh, you really hate it when people say that. And I'm like, no, it's not that I hate it. I love that you are a good dad, but I hate that it's like, no one's going to say to me ever, or to you, isn't she good with them? Because they're going to expect that as the mum.
I know.
So
the people say the same to Jared, and he gets to do like all the fun stuff where they like take her to sea life and go to the zoo and stuff. And I'm like, oh, I would do that today, but you know, I've got to deal with the dishes and the laundry and then work and
yeah.
And then,
yeah,
you know, and then she, like, when she goes to him, it's like all fun. And I'm like, fuck's sake.
Yeah. No, I feel you on that one. I feel you on that one.
What do you implement into a routine to help you with all of this kind of energy and clarity around working and being a mum? Like, how do you keep on top of it all?
Have I got clarity? I haven't got clarity. No, what do I do? Do you know what? It's hard because my family aren't close by in terms of like geographically, so they're hours away. Brian's are in Ireland. Where my therapist said to me, when I was really going under at the very beginning of both of the postpartum periods, she just said to me, first of all, make sure that you've got like some sort of help for every day of the next 6 weeks. She said, because this is the hardest. So yeah. What I did was I tried to build up a bit of a network of like, whether it was a friend or a babysitter or a nanny or a childcare person or a good, the nursery that we use is amazing. We're so lucky that we've, you know, that it's around the corner and we've got access to it. So that's like another family to us as well now. So I've just kind of had to get my head around not feeling guilty about having as much help as possible. And sometimes that can be financially quite stressful. And then other times it sort of like pays itself back, you know, in terms of like your mental health or the fact that yeah. obviously you're working more or you're able to kind of like just formulate ideas. So that's the first thing, not being afraid of asking for help and lots of it. But you have to obviously feel that you can trust people, and it's you know, a lot of people will have their family there, and so you know they'll see their parents a couple of days a week, and I always think, God, that must be amazing. But we don't have that. What else would I do? I'd say I'm quite good at being able to see when my hormones are hijacking how I feel. If I feel like I'm going, I keep saying going under, but that's what they say up north where I live now. They always say that as a phrase. But whenever I feel like that, I'm quite good at sort of being aware of physiologically and psychologically things I could change. Like whether it's, I mean, at the moment, sleep is a little tough because of the late shifts that I'm doing with radio, but I have got a bit more time in the day free. So I listen to my body a bit more than I ever have, in terms of, right, I do actually just need a bit more sleep. So I might feel like I want to kill everyone, but actually it is just a bit of sleep deprivation. Yeah, exactly. So I try to... Yeah, so I'll try to like respond instead of react. I've used to be such a hothead. Today, actually, I lost my temper.
You sound just like me. It's so funny.
No, oh, it's really similar.
Just with this like emotional. And he was picking her up, and I was like, just take her, man, hurry up. And then I'm like, yo, I need to sleep, because I don't normally respond like that.
Yeah. Do you know what? Sleep, I mean, if you think about it, like they've tortured people with sleep deprivation. So it's such a thing where it can really, really just send you over the edge. And if you don't listen to the fact that you're not getting enough sleep, like you said, that out of body experience of, I was chatting to a woman once in Wagamama's, this waitress. I always end up in like conversations with random people because I find people so interesting. So I'll start, and then whoever I'm with is like rolling their eyes, probably Brian, thinking, oh, here she goes again. Anyway, I got talking to this waitress. She told me that when she was feeding her baby, the baby's face was changing because she was so sleep deprived, she was hallucinating. And I was like, wow. Oh my God. And I was like, I get it. Like, people just don't understand. And because we don't really talk about it as parents and slash mainly as mums, because we just are like, oh yeah, how are you? I'm all right, you know. No, I'm not. I'm literally hallucinating and crying. And the amount of phones I've smashed, I literally, honestly, because if I don't smash the phone on the floor, it's going towards Brian's head. But like, poor Brian. But no, I mean, I mean, there was one handset I bought outright that was no like insurance, no like, you know, like an unlock phone where I thought, I really want my phone, and smashed it. I was like, Sarah, what are you doing? That's your own 1200 quid you've just smashed into smithereens. We need to work on this anger. We need to get some sleep. Gosh. So I found pregnancy in the postpartum period very, very challenging. In fact, it's funny because Summer's very articulate. So I was teaching her the other day because Brian was away for a couple of days of work. And actually, I think it's nice when we have a few days apart, we tend to get on better. I think social norms are, oh, you have to sleep in the same bed and you've got to be together every day. And it's like, I don't agree. Like, I like sleeping in the spare room when I want to and all the rest of it. Because I just think if you've got the space, why not? And I said to Summer, the word is, mummy's emotional. And she was going, emotional. And I said, yeah, don't worry, mummy's just emotional. So anytime she would do something that would make me smile, but then I'd be crying and she'd go, mummy. And I'd go, no, I'm not sad, I'm happy. But it's just, I'm just emotional.
Kids are clever, man, aren't they?
Oh God, yeah, definitely.
Also, when we aren't the best versions of ourselves, I find like I'm not the best version for her either.
You can't be the best version for anyone unless you're like looking after yourself first, 100%.
Definitely. And going back to what you said about postnatal, hormones played a huge part. I had prenatal and postnatal depression. And a lot of it was to do with a previous baby loss that I had. I developed OCD during my pregnancy. I was depressed. I didn't want to leave my bed every day. It was horrible. I had like the worst anxiety waking up, and I never knew why. I never quite understood it. I had panic attacks, but then the OCD I developed, like I had intrusive thoughts that were so messed up and they seemed to like take over my brain It was mad. And then I was obsessed with cleaning. I remember it was Christmas. We had all his family around and I was like, everyone needs to leave. It was so weird. I was like, I was getting like anxiety that my house would be like not tidy enough. And I've never been like that. And I just found myself doing strange rituals as well, like when I was brushing my teeth and weird shit like that. And I only, when I went to therapy and kind of researched on it properly, it was a lot to do with hormones, obviously. And the way that my brain was kind of dealing with trauma. I mean, how was it like for you with your postnatal depression?
Do you know what? It's funny because there's a lot of things trauma related that I'd been through, where like with, and this is another reason why I was your page always really resonated with me, because there's a lot of things that I've never really shared about to do with like relationships and things that I've been through and ways I'd been treated. So there was all of that. Then there was like you also mentioned, I mean, my heart broke for you with what you went through. And you know, I did experience a baby loss. It wasn't like what you went through at all. And it was an early loss, a miscarriage that I had. But I still certainly had a lot of anxiety around when I then got pregnant with Summer, which was a bit about 6 months later. Every time I'd have a scan, I'd be in pieces and just things like that. And the OCD thing was interesting, though, because I'd had that for years, but it kind of quietened down. I'd had therapy for it, so I understood the school of thought around it in terms of like how you can sometimes do this thing. I don't know if they ever told you about like exposure treatment, where you have to just like do the thing you're scared to do basically and see what happens. And you're like, that's easier than it sounds, because obviously I feel like my child's going to die if I don't put that sock on with this. So what are you talking about? So there was all of that kind of stuff going on. But I knew, because I'd experienced it before, like if you don't turn left here, then this person in your family is going to die. Or if you do this, then you're going to die. Or just silly things like that, which obviously don't feel silly because they're, you know, crescendoing in your head all the time. Because I'd been through it before and I'd had therapy for it before. I kind of knew when I got pregnant, because I wanted to be a mum so desperately for a while, that once I got pregnant, I knew it was going to come back, because I just knew it would then be the trigger of this like anxiety-inducing time where you're like trying to grow this human being.
Yeah. For me, pregnancy was awful both times, to be honest. The first time I was in an abusive relationship, and then the second time obviously was me trying to navigate after baby loss. But I can say that was probably the worst time of my life being pregnant, when it kind of should have been the most enjoyable moment. And we have that pressure, don't we? Is, oh, we're pregnant, everything should be like fine and happy. You lost the baby, but you're having one now, you should be happy. And
oh god.
And I understand that you've suffered a miscarriage, which I'm sorry to hear about. And I was just trying to like kind of wonder how you dealt with having your daughter after.
Yeah, so certainly that pregnancy with Summer was really scary, because I was just like, I didn't have any proof that I could actually have a baby, really, other than I'd lost a baby. And then I was like, because I feel like you have to have evidence of something happening in order to then have confidence in it for the future, don't you? I think I heard someone else talking about this. It might have been Stephen Bartlett, where he's just talking about like, in order for you to have confidence in something, you need to have evidence that it can exist. So so once I had Summer, then with Bonnie, I was a little bit less anxious. But certainly when she was born, Summer and Bonnie, I definitely went through just like very dark times, really dark times, where I would go out. I remember just after Bonnie was born, and Brian and I, you know, it was quite tense between us, even, because Brian's a great guy. Like, he'd never raise his voice at me, but he has got a lot of pressure on him in terms of the job that he does. And we might fall out, but it wouldn't be in ways that I'd previously fallen out with ex-partners, where it'd been quite, you know, like explosive. And it's luckily our relationship is definitely a safe space, and it's never anything like that. However, there'd definitely be times where I'd feel really stressed and I'd think, I have to get out of here. So then I would just, this is like when Bonnie's like a few weeks old, I'd like go out in the car, I'd be driving, and I'd just think, that's it, I might as well, do you know what, I just need to just drive into a wall, like I can't. But luckily that only lasted for like 3 or 4 weeks, and rationally as well, I knew in my head that it was just hormones. I knew that. So I was kind of watching myself going, Sarah, this is actually just hormones, and you're fine, and everything's fine, and you're in this great house, and you've got a lovely partner, and it's all fine, your child's healthy, everything's okay, you're safe. But I was just like, no, I'm a piece of shit, I shouldn't be here. And it's just really, really difficult. And I just, you know, I mean, luckily I wasn't ever like, it sounds like I was, but like from what I've said, but I wasn't ever close to actually, you know, doing something silly. Yeah. It was just thoughts.
It sounds like you were quite self-aware. of what your thoughts were.
Yeah, I was, luckily.
But it feels like you're battling with like the back and forth of kind of questioning yourself about them. And that's the worst bit, when you're battling with your own mind like that.
That is the battle, isn't it? You've got that higher consciousness that's like Sarah, or, you know, you're speaking to yourself. And then you've got... But the thing about hormones is that's quite scary. And this is why I'm glad I don't drink anymore, is that you almost feel at one with them. So you feel like when you're hungover, or when you've done loads of drugs, or when you wake up in the morning and you've got the fear and that feeling of like paranoia, it's like you can't separate yourself from that feeling. It's like, I am this feeling. And that's what's scary. That's why when you can sort of like somehow separate yourself, whether it's because you've not had any drink or drugs or for months, and then suddenly the cloud lifts, or you're 6 weeks postpartum and suddenly you're just feeling normal again, or that's when you can sort of see that actually it was just this biochemical occurrence in your brain.
It took me ages to figure that out though. Like, I'm quite spiritual, so I wanted to understand our body, our spirit, our physical, our non-physical, and how we aren't just our bodies. We, you know, we're our essence, our soul. And to me, it was about having everything balanced, our mind, body, and spirit. And when those three were aligned, everything kind of flowed. But it's hard to tell yourself, I'm not my mind. So when you separate, as you said, when you separate yourself from that and realize, like, kind of like a bird's eye view on life and what you're doing, you see things differently. But when you are in that mix of drinking, drugs, hormones or whatever it is, or like a tough time, you're really in it and you're so consumed in it. It takes over everything of your body. And that's when you become ill, and that's when things start happening, and you can't seem to find a way out.
Definitely. And I think that's what's sad about those people that do take their own life. Because I'm sure I heard... Where did I hear the statistic that for those people who had tried to take their own life and it failed, the majority of them, a very high percentage, like over the 90% of people that were then asked whether they wished it had happened, most of them regretted what they'd done. I think if you're... Sometimes some people are so consumed in a moment, they can make a decision. It's like a light switch. It's a decision you can't take back, happens, and then no one ever knows that person probably wouldn't have done that if they just had a brighter day the next day.
Yeah, so, definitely.
That's why I get, like, if people need help with antidepressants and stuff, it does make sense. Like, it's not something that I ended up doing. Back when I was 18, I went through a hard time and I used antidepressants then, and my mum was really supportive and that really helped. And then I was away from antidepressants after that, and I've never really revisited it. But I definitely would say to anybody listening that if that's what the help you need, go ahead and do it, because you would get a sling put on your arm if you broke your arm. Your mind is the same. You need to heal it in whatever way is most effective. It's just it just so happens that my therapist is a CBT practitioner, so obviously she's not a psychiatrist where she would necessarily prescribe antidepressants. She, in her head, she's thinking, right, this is how I'm gonna help Sarah get through whatever she's been through. And I still check in with her now, and I feel amazing after I speak to her. So those were like the hardest times, I think, the first trimester of both pregnancies and the postpartum period. But if I ever had any other children, I don't know if I will get to, but if I did or do, then I would definitely know already. Like, because even on by the time I had Bonnie, like I said to my therapist, I was like, I know fully well that this is just the first trimester. I just feel like I'm under that black cloud again. And she was like, right, well, let's just see how we go. And she gave me some practical tips. And then she was like, obviously, if you do need additional help, we can sort it, but let's just see. Da, da, da. And then I was fine. And then the same thing postpartum. So this time I'd kind of know. And then when you've got that support of someone to speak to, and then also other people that can come and help you, and you're getting, and that sleep is so important. Like, even if it's just 5 hours of unbroken sleep, so that your mind can go into that REM kind of sleep where you're getting that unbroken sleep, that's so important, because you can feel like the world is ending when it's just that you haven't had a sleep.
I was just about to ask you, how did you get out of that dark place?
Do you know what? I have to give, as much as Brian drives me mad, like, I have to give him major credit here, because he actually did a ton of night shifts for a good 4 months, because I was pregnant 2020 and 2021, and
so close together, isn't it?
That's the thing. So I was pregnant, actually, no, and 2019 we had the miscarriage in the mid 2019. Then I was pregnant with Summer for 2020, and it was obviously the pandemic. Then had Bonnie in 2021, so it's 15 months between them. And I just said to him, like, I know I'm going to fall apart at the seams if I don't get sleep. So I was like, let's, and I was like, so we should maybe think about, like, getting someone in to help us. And he was like, no, it's fine. I'll do the night shifts. And the thing about him is that he is able, he is somebody, I mean, it would have been hard for him, so I'm not going to play it down, but he is, and I say, I speak in the past tense because now Bonnie's sleeping through the night, thank the Lord. But I say this not to play it down, but like, he is the kind of person who, he could just fall asleep now, lights bright, white, you know, on, windows open, whatever. And if he wakes up, he could just do a feed, go to sleep, everything's blessed. For me, I have to make sure I'm sticking things on, any pilot lights in the room, everything's got to be jet black. Yeah. And if I wake, like, he was away for 2 nights and Bonnie actually did wake up. She just wanted, and I just put the dummy back in and she was fine. At 3 a.m, this is like either yesterday or the day before, I was done for. I was like awake. I was on Instagram. Same, I was probably looking at one of your reels or something. Night. I was just like, I can't sleep now.
Scrolling through my phone at 3 a.m, man. Then once you're on it, that's it. The blue light's fucked you.
The blue light has fucked you because it's like telling you it's daytime and it's all this melatonin in your head, or I don't know what happens with the psychology of it. But so, yeah. So then, and then the dog's then like telling me he wants to go out, and then it's 5 a.m. Then we get back in bed and I'm like, I actually feel like I can fall asleep. Then it's like, mummy from summer. And I'm like, okay, I'm done for. And that was like 4 hours sleep. So definitely I would probably not even be sitting here now. I'd probably be hospitalized if I hadn't have had that grace period of him doing the night feeds and this amazing counselor that I'm very lucky that I was able to afford to use. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure there's people that you can be referred to on the NHS that are amazing as well. I just decided that I really needed to invest in this for my health.
Definitely. And
it wasn't cheap, but I just thought, you know what? If you haven't got your mind, you've got nothing, you know?
100%. I mean, was children something you've always seen yourself having?
I became obsessed with wanting to be a mum because throughout my 20s, I really struggled with like period pains, and then I found out I had endometriosis. Then
it's been a lot for you, right?
Yeah, from a reproductive health point of view, it has. Then in my early 30s, around the time when I was doing Extra Factor, and the reason why I mentioned that is because I was working solidly. I had like a lump coming out of my side, but I didn't really tell anyone because I thought I didn't want to seem like this broken person who had to like get help.
Yeah.
So I had this lump coming out of my side. I'd had a breast lump removed. They told me I had a massive fibroid that was the size of if I was 3 months pregnant. So I got that removed after the series had finished. We went away for Christmas, got absolutely wrecked. This is the ridiculous thing about it. I look back now and I think, I can't believe I did this, but we went to Barbados. We got like wrecked every night and did whatever. And then when I say we, I don't mean like Simon Cowell and all those guys. I'm talking about me. They were all there, but like everybody, a lot of the people from the show were all there as well. So it was like, I was there with my boyfriend at the time. Then there was a load of people there. So it was kind of like this whole big thing, like, oh, Barbados at Christmas and all of this. Meanwhile, and then literally 2 weeks after I got back, I had to have this fibroid removed. And it was like, now if I had surgery for something, I would be detoxed. I mean, I don't even need to detox now, really, because I there's nothing I really do other than I'd maybe need to like stop having a bit of sugar and stuff here and there.
Oh man! But so you live clean. That's amazing. I mean, I've done, what is it? Yeah, 2 months pretty much now sober, and I'm like, am I going to do this forever? I feel like I should, because I'm not missing out and I'm doing much more like work wise and energy levels. So you've done 5 years.
The turning point for me was that I was in a relationship that was pretty volatile all the time. And this person was definitely somebody who also was like not living clean. And so we would always be in these situations where it would be on a mad one and then have a massive argument. And there was just one day where it just went, and I was working on a show at the time. It was quite a big TV show. And I called my agent the next day and I said, I can't even, and never in my entire career of 15 years or however long it's been, have I ever had to cancel a day's filming over any like domestic or anything. But this day I was literally like damaged, like physically as well. So I was like, I can't be on camera. Like it was horrendous what had happened the night before. And I was like, I can't film today. And I was like in tears. And I just thought, Sarah, we are done with alcohol from today. And I remember a friend of mine who used to be in the entertainment industry, who battled with different addictions, who now, and in the press, people, I won't say her name, but in the press people know what she's been through because she's spoken about it. But she's always been like quite a mentor to me. I'd been to AA meetings with her in like LA and different things. I'm not trying to sound show busy at all. I was just living there for a couple of years. Yeah. So I'd gone to these meetings with her. And then I remember messaging her throughout this relationship being like, I don't know what to do. I need to get out of it. And I remember when I did go sober, she said to me, write the date down and don't forget it. And ever since then, it's just been like, and that's why this year it was 5-year anniversary. It's just always been like a really special, you know, July. Well, now it's 5 years. So yeah, it's amazing. But that was a real turning point for me. I was just like getting into just too much drama. And especially if you're in a relationship with somebody else who drinks a lot or whatever, and they're not necessarily the most peaceful person. That's all I say about that. Do you know what I mean? Where you then end up, you know what it's like.
So when you look back on where your life was then, mentally and what like with the drinking and stuff, and then you fast forward, like it's crazy how much you can change, but like grow and learn, so much growth. But what would you tell that Sarah? If you could tell her anything, what would it be?
I would have said to have walked away from that situation like a lot quicker. I mean, I wasn't in it for too long, but I definitely would have. I think the alcohol doesn't help, because the great thing about when I did walk away from the situation was I didn't go back to it. So as soon as I went sober and that person then reached out to me again, I was just able to completely ignore them. And then they, maybe 6 months later, then they reached out again. But at this point, I'm getting more and more straight and sober, and every time this little mole kept popping up and you're hitting it with the mallet, you know, like that game, you're like, I don't need this. And I remember once, ironically, my friend who was hammered at the time, we'd been to this party and in Shoreditch or something, and we'd stayed at the hotel that it was at. And she said to me the next day, please don't speak to this person anymore. I'm begging you. And she was like crying. She was like, please don't speak to this person anymore. Like, they're just no good for you. I'm begging you. Like, you're so much better than that. And then I just thought, you're right. Like, and yeah, I wish she'd take her own advice, because she's been in a similar situation. But we all have to go through our own journey. Like, and your friends, and this is the problem with relationships that are a bit volatile and people that aren't right for you. I feel like you've got all these friends and or maybe family members that will be like, no, like, leave this person. And then you'll say, yeah. And then you almost feel like you've got to then, you're in this lie because you're like back with them. Yeah. I don't know what I would tell the old me. I think I probably would have stopped drinking sooner. I actually tried it for a while. Like in my late 20s, I'd do like 6 months sober and then I'd go back to drinking. And then I'd do. So I was always on that mission for a while. Mm. But I was so glad that I just feel so proud of myself. And then there was another relationship that came after that, just before I met with Brian. Met Brian. And that was also one that was pretty dysfunctional, and a couple of not great things happened there. But the good thing was that time when that ended, it was just done. And I didn't have any drunken moments of like, oh, I really miss this person. Of course, I miss them, because naturally, even when someone's super toxic, you miss them. That's the fucked up thing, isn't it? Because
it's somewhere like a drug addiction.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so I had those moments in my head, but luckily I didn't act on them. And so I look back and I think, yes, Sarah, like, you didn't contact that person once. You walked away and you were done because you were sober. So I think it's allowed me to just deal with really hard times so much better. And I've had times where I look back and I think, oh, why did I shout and swear? Because I'm sure the neighbours heard, and I'll see the neighbour and I think, I'm so embarrassed. They probably heard me go, oh, Brian. But at least I'm doing it from a sober place. So now, yes, I still need to work on my anger? Absolutely. Am I still super emotional at times and do things where I should respond and not react? 100%. But at least, say that again, sorry.
I react a lot. I'm guilty of that, man. I need to check in with myself sometimes and be like, don't react. Are you in a reactive state?
But that's the thing. When you're sober, the longer you're sober, it's just so much easier. Like, I feel like when you're drinking, for me, the analogy I would use would be like, it's like a car and it's just covered in shit the whole time. When you stop drinking, you go through a car wash, and then when you come out the other end, the car might have these scratches on it, and then they're the ones you can look at and go, right, I've taken all the shit off. Now I know, 5 years sober, I am still somebody who has issues of having anger and rage issues. I am, but I'm not that person that will go back to someone who isn't right for me. I'm not that person that. Because do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I can see these scratches in the bodywork that still need work, and I can acknowledge and take responsibility for certain things. And by the way, also these two people that I mentioned, I in my head was just really obsessed with wanting to become a mum. So to be fair to them, as much as they weren't the greatest of people for me, I also wasn't really in it for the right reason. I was consumed with this, I'm going to be a mum, have to be a mum. And so it wasn't anyone will do, because I obviously did feel like I had feelings for these people at the time. But I think they knew as well that I had like a bit of an agenda, and I think it meant that I was settling for something that wasn't good enough for me.
Yeah, 100%. Usually with toxic relationships, it boils down to your self-worth and how much you love yourself. And these kind of insecurities and triggers and allowing yourself to be treated in a way is more down to all the healing that you need to still do. That's what I figured out. And it's such a long journey. But when you are sober, as you say, you just see things in a completely different light. It's like, it's more of a sped up version.
100%. And also, I think it's just that it's a bit like when you go out to a really crap night. When you're drunk, you'll happily stay, well, I would have happily stayed till 3-4 in the morning, or next thing you know, you're back at people's houses, or you're, do you know what I mean? And then the night goes on till 10 in the morning or whatever. And then for me now, if I go somewhere and it's rubbish, I'm gone by 10:30 at night. Like, why am I here? So there's just certain things that I wouldn't have the energy anyway, but there's just certain things that I wouldn't even entertain now. So I certainly wouldn't entertain somebody who's an asshole, or I'm having a crap time, so I'm going to stay. So I think it's that as well. I just don't have that sort of, those bad decision, I don't know. I love myself a bit more, and also there's more work I can be doing on the whole self-love thing. I think it's really hard to just suddenly be like in love with yourself and insecurities are gone and all the rest of it. But definitely I also just feel so proud of myself for that sobriety and that I haven't broken it, you know?
Yeah. No, 100%. I can't wait to, I want to be able to say I've done 5 years. That's every day that goes by, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so proud. And that's what we forget as well. As humans, we're always looking at what we don't have or what we haven't accomplished yet. And we forget about all the gratitude for what's happened in our lives and how far we've come. So you should be so proud of yourself. Honestly, you're an inspiration too. And being so honest, speaking about all of these things, it's going to help so many women and men.
Just doing the best we can with what we have. And that's the way I feel about a lot of people who I might look back at and think, oh, this person's done this to me. And it's like, well, they probably feel they were doing the best for, you know, version of themselves at the time and as well. So, and I'm definitely responsible for a lot of drama in my life that's happened and things as well.
Snap. It's accountability, isn't it? And realizing, and then just kind of working on it and improving. There's always room for improvement, constantly growing
definitely.
And learning.
It's growth. Growth and evolving is such a key word, I think, that encapsulates it, isn't it? We want to...
Definitely.
If you're evolving and you feel like you're growing... Tony Robbins, who I love, the life coach...
I love Tony Robbins.
Yeah, oh, you do? Oh, brilliant. So one of the things... Because he always says that we've got these human needs and one of them is growth. And it's so true. It's like you do want to feel like... And that, and parenting for me has been amazing, because no matter what's happening in my career, whether it's quiet or whether it's really busy, it's like... Being a mum is such a consuming job, and seeing Summer, just as an example, Bonnie obviously as well, but she's a lot younger, but Summer, the way her brain works and her changing all the time, that's real. It's just such a, I don't know, it's just, it's like, that's a job in itself anyway.
Yeah.
So that in itself gives me growth.
Definitely. Oh, this chat's been amazing, Sarah. Thank you so much for coming on. I've learned a lot. And weirdly enough, I was like, oh, I might drink on my 30th because I'm turning 30. In October, and now I'm like, nah, yo, I don't need to.
Oh, you're so young. You've done amazingly well. Like, you're somebody who has such resilience. You're somebody who's probably helped so many people, and you have very early on in your life realized the importance of being very vulnerable and open and honest. And that's something that took me a long time, especially in this industry. You know, I was unwilling to be talking about things that I was battling with and stuff like that. Unwilling to look anything other than what I thought presenting or whatever on TV should look like. Mm. So well done to you for that, because you're way ahead of the game compared to what I was doing at that point, you know?
Oh, thank you, Sarah. I love speaking to Sarah Jane after hearing her on the radio and being a fan for so long. Thank you, Sarah, for sharing your journey with us all. Next week, I'm back speaking to a charity on a topic that is so, so close to my heart. I'm with Tommy's ahead of Baby Loss Awareness Week, which is the 9th to the 15th of October. Please do follow now so you don't miss that conversation and all those I've yet to come on Superpower State of Mind.